quarter than our man Wild Bill. He was Cupid earlier this year. It's got to be distracting shooting free throws.
What's up? It's your boy Wild Bill coming at you live. Recorded.
I like that. That's true.
With the Aggie Legends podcast. You know, I'm in studio with my dude, Kellen.
Sup, dude.
You know, my wife says that to me sometimes now.
Does she?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
She'll come home. Sup, dude.
Sup, dude. I do hate it when, like, ever you call and I'm like, sup, dude? And you're like, sup, dude.
Sup, dude.
It's like, sorry, it's our thing now.
Yeah, I like them. What's up, dude? Aggies, you guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for the emails, the love.
The tweets.
The tweeters.
The stories.
Oh my gosh.
A giveaway for some tickets to the club level.
Yeah,
what game was
that?
Nevada.
Yeah.
Got some awesome stories. We should maybe one of these days compile those and post them somewhere.
Yeah, we should.
They were so good. Congrats to the winners.
One of my favorites that didn't win was Charlie Riddles.
Oh, yeah. C. Ridd. I don't know. I've never called him that in my life. I just did right now.
He is a C. Ridd.
But his story was great.
Yeah.
His picture was awesome.
Yeah.
With the guys on the front row. Yep. And it was awesome.
Yeah. I have a really cool picture with Charlie and me and some of the other boys down at the WAC tournament 2000. And when was the first one? Yep, 10. And they're screaming. And their veins are just out of their neck.
This is surprising.
Since you can't see my veins, I'm screaming and no veins. But it was really cool.
Yeah, if
really
we could see your veins at that point, we'd have been in trouble.
Probably a heart attack. Pretty imminent.
If you could see Bill's veins in 2010, call 911.
Please. All right, perfect. We got a good guy for you tonight.
Yeah, really excited.
Not an athlete per se. Not collegiate level athlete. Right?
Yeah.
No, I like you're not going to offend me, so you're good.
Yeah,
he was on the coaching staff at Utah State for a while.
Very recognizable. Most people will know.
Some
who
people
he is.
Called him a water boy. Me and Ty Wesley called him Coach Parker ever since he was not Coach Parker. Then he became Coach Parker. And everybody's like, oh, you're just calling because, no, we've called him Coach Parker since he was just the manager of the team. But this is Jesse Parker, one of my good friends. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, we love it.
I'm definitely not a legend, but
that's not true.
I do appreciate you guys taking the time.
If you've seen me naked, you're a legend.
Okay.
So then literally
we have
every
a
Aggie.
Lot of legends in Aggie
that,
country.
That,
there
that
are
actually
plenty
upholds
of us.
Our mantra, which is every Aggie's a legend. They all qualify. Thank you, Bill.
Good point. Never mind. Sorry. We'll pull the naked naked thing out there. Just normal.
Fair enough.
If you have a heartbeat, you've seen me naked.
In Logan, yep.
Very close. Yep.
So talk to us a little bit about where you're from, first of all. Let's tell that story, and then we'll jump into kind of your time as an Aggie.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in a small town, Camas, Utah, 20 miles east of Park City.
Beautiful area.
Are you actually from Camas?
Well,
the town you're in is not actually Camas.
It's not. It's Woodland. But if I say Woodland, people are, you know, where is that? So
yeah, people
we just
are
claim
still
going to
be like, what's Camas?
Well,
that's true. Francis.
I do like
exactly.
And Oakley, which... Not,
hey, let me,
P-O-A.
Before we get too crazy in, if you ever have a reason to go to Camas, like you're going up in the UNS, you got to stop by High Country Drug.
Oh, yeah.
High Mountain.
High Mountain Drug. High Mountain Drug.
Yeah, home cut fries.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the signature.
That's the best thing? Dude, everything. Actually, they are really good.
Really good.
We went over with a bunch of friends, and we bought our food, we ate our food, whatever, and I bought fries to go because they were amazing. They were that good.
Sounds about right.
They were
The spot,
and we just shared them in the car on the way to Midway. But no, High Mountain Drug, top shelf, dude.
And
you're eating in like a store.
Yeah,
with like a drug store.
It's an old-fashioned, old-time drugstore. It's been there forever.
Like a soda fountain, that kind of deal.
Yep.
Guys.
That spot, my great-grandpa and I, in the summers fixing fence and doing all that farm stuff, that's where he and I would go to eat lunch.
Oh,
that was like the spot. A mug root beer, a burger, fries. That was our place.
We used to just go to Dick's, and I love Dick's. But... No, have you ever been? It's a really
Dick's Drive-In, yeah.
Dick's Drive-In, yeah.
Yeah.
These guys think I'm being an idiot, but no, I'm serious.
Because you smiled when you said it. Jeez.
But no, Dick's is really good. Good little burger joint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now, High Mountain Drug, boom. That's where
I'm with you. I agree.
So, that's sorry. The spot. Sorry to interrupt.
A little advertising
when,
there.
When Camus gets brought up, that's what I think about.
I think about fly fishing on the Beaver Creek over there anyway.
Okay.
Sorry.
Hey, isn't there a Beaver Creek nudist colony up there, too?
There is.
I don't know. Yeah. Is there?
Yeah, it's right up the road out of Camus.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Beaver Creek nudist.
There is. Yep. And we actually know. My family knows the people who run, in quotations, the nudist camp, which is basically just their cabin. There's nothing to be seen
there's
there.
Two
but
members.
Yeah. Seriously. But
chill. I'm gonna go up there.
Yeah. Swing on by. They'd love to have you.
Literally swing. Yeah.
They'll be all about it until I drop trowel and they're like, man, never mind. Not everybody's the one.
We should rethink this whole nudist thing.
Take down the signs.
Sorry, I will go on so many tangents. I'll let you go.
Yeah.
Coach, sorry.
So grew up
there. Grew up in Camus. My dad was the head football coach and basketball coach for a while.
South Summit?
At South Summit, yep. He retired 3 or 4 years ago. I really don't remember.
Has some state championships under his belt.
He did win a couple state championships, one in basketball and then two in football, and played for multiple others, but had a good long run in Camus. And
what was his what's it called? What level?
Yeah,
2A. It was a 2A high school at the time, and then they just went 3A in the last realignment.
Ooh, stepping
so.
Up.
Yeah, growing. Camus
is
growing,
it is
for
a
sure.
Bit, actually.
Yeah. Dude, absolutely.
It's gross how much all these small towns are getting big.
For sure.
Like Francis, like we were looking at Francis. Like I'd like to move up somewhere like that, but like even that's getting expensive and big.
Yes, it is. Everywhere. It's insane what's going on.
My wife would move up there with me if we could find a decent job up there.
I'm trying to recruit you back to Logan.
We're 100% in for that.
Good.
When I say we're... I'm 150 and she's about 75. So that
see
that
it averages out. I like it.
I like that. Excuse me.
So perfect. Yeah. So your dad was a coach.
Yep. Son of a coach.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, I thought there was.
We are not getting very far in this interview. This is
son
too
of
much
a coach.
Fun.
Yeah. The son of a coach.
Jesse Barker, a real son of a coach.
Yeah, exactly. That's about it. That sums it up. See you guys later. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, you don't come from a long line of Aggies, do you? I mean, your sister.
My dad actually is an alum, and that's Logan
he?
Is where my parents met. Yep.
Coach Parker's an alum.
He is. He is an Aggie alum, and so I guess that he's a first generation, and then then us. But my sister, she graduated from Utah State. My little sister attended a couple semesters at Utah State.
Yep.
So, it's been a family affair. Yep, Snooky. little Snooky.
And your older sister, she actually met her husband up here at Utah
She
State.
Did, yep. They both were active in the Greek community and received their degrees, and then they currently live in Salt Lake right now. So,
What Greek orgs were they with?
My sister is a Chi...
Omega.
I have to think.
That was the one that was in there before.
Yes.
Okay.
And then my brother-in-law's an Alpha Chi. And then
because that's a sorority.
Oh, just kidding.
Sigma Chi?
Sigma Chi.
Okay, that's
Yeah. Sigma Chi, Chi Omega. And then my little sister was a Kappa Delta. Yeah.
Nice.
So, yep.
Go Greek orgs.
Yeah. The family was well represented. And I always give my sisters a hard time because they're like, well, you don't understand being Greek. And I said, well... Being involved with the basketball team was kind of my fraternity.
For sure.
Yeah.
So it was very similar to the experiences they got.
Yeah.
You know, it was a brotherhood and
very much so.
Spending a lot of time together.
A lot of time together.
For sure.
So my Greek life just looked a little different than theirs. But.
Absolutely.
Well, and I feel like, you know, being Greek, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't do that. And I always feel weird saying being Greek, because you're not Greek. you're not
Greek. Say I'm Greek. I was just part of the Greek
system. Yeah, whatever it is. Right? But being part of the the fraternity sorority stuff, there's a lot of good connections there.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jesse. You've had lots of good connections, and that's how you've gotten your jobs, is through your basketball fraternity, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when our time ended here at Utah State, I went to Phoenix, Grand Canyon University, for a year, and it was through a basketball connection that I...
Which I want to bring that up later and talk about that, because I want to...
Yeah.
Because we've talked about it a little bit, but I actually haven't dived into it near what I want to hear, so let's talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
So what? So you came up because your dad did, or was it...
I got involved, actually, with the basketball team. It's kind of a weird story. My dad, I was going to school in Logan, and my dad had brought up one of his high school teams for summer camp. And I was coaching his freshman-level high school kids for him. And we were waiting around for a game to start, and my predecessor and mentor, Lance Becker,
yes,
needed somebody to officiate a basketball game. And we were down in the freshman gym at Logan High School, and just hanging out, and he was desperate for an official. And I said, well, I do run all the intramurals on campus.
So you're already involved on campus.
Yeah, I was involved with the intramural program. My whole college career was doing intramural stuff. But I ended up officiating a game for him. That's how I got introduced to him. And then a couple weeks later, I went back to the office, to his office over there at the Spectrum, and I just kept bugging him and bugging him and bugging him about an opportunity with the team. Would they have anything come up? Are they looking for team managers? And I literally bugged him every day for weeks and weeks and weeks. And the first response I kept getting was, no, no, we don't need anybody. We don't have space. We don't have anything for you as far as scholarship or anything like that. And I finally told him, I said, look, I'm the son of a coach. I need something to do. I'll volunteer my time. And that's how I got in. I volunteered for the whole first year.
Oh, really?
With the basketball program. And
wow.
It was all under volunteer, huh?
Yeah, the first year was, yeah. And we finally convinced Coach Morrill to let this scrawny little sophomore in college come hang out with the team. And best decision I ever made.
What year was that?
That would have been 2007. Yeah, the fall of 2007 was my second year up here, so...
Oh, that's awesome.
I forget you're super old.
Yeah, really old.
My freshman year at Utah State was 2007.
Mm.
Now I was 25.
Yep. I was going to say, and the punchline.
That's funny. Okay, cool. So you just bugged the hell out of Coach Becker till he's like, all right, we'll find you something.
Finally,
what did they have you doing?
In the beginning, well, for the first... Gosh, I was with the team 11 years total, I think, 10 or 11 years. And in the beginning, it was typical manager duties, a lot of laundry. I've done probably 3 million loads of laundry. I've folded 6 million towels. I mean, it's.
I always wanted to take my laundry up there because they're so big and you can get everything done at one spot.
Yes, that, boom, bam. Absolutely.
Better than a laundromat.
I can just imagine. I would, Jesse accidentally pulling a pair of whitey tighties. I'm like,
whose are these? This is a circus tent. Yeah. What is this?
I have a small waist, you jerk.
You do have a small waist.
You do.
Chicken legs.
Yeah.
No butt.
No butt.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a back with a crack.
Yep.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, that's kind of where I started, is a lot of laundry and then...
So did you travel that first year at all, or was it just
I traveled just a couple, like, in-state games. I wasn't really on the travel roster.
Right.
And it was just hanging out, making sure everything got done for the guys.
Did you literally provide water at times?
I did. Okay. We always joked, and Bill can attest to this, that we always joked that I was a Division I water boy because I lived and hung out with all the athletes.
Right.
Yeah. And so
had a lot of fun.
We had a lot of fun. Thank goodness this is an hour long podcast because we could probably talk for a really long time.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too, is like a guy like you, I mean, definitely more involved with the team than I was, but then in me, not part of the team, were the hanging out with these guys on the team, And, you know, living with him, hanging out with him, just loving life. And it was so cool. It was a testament to me of the caliber of guys. They didn't care that we weren't actually
absolutely
players that would let us just be like idiots with him.
And yeah, hang out. For sure. Well, and that's probably what I enjoyed most is we were just buddies, you know? We didn't have to. And that's a unique thing about Utah State, in my opinion, now that I've worked somewhere else, is the experience we got, we didn't have to be athletes or the cool kids or, you know, it's a family affair in Logan. And that's something I appreciate now more than ever are the relationships that we got to make through, you know, just what we did in Logan with the basketball program and you know, my overall experience. It was awesome. I wouldn't trade any of that.
I have a question regarding you mentioned transitioning into an actual employee. Did you have to interview with Stu? Did you have to get like? How did you? Because like some of the guys talk about some of the process of going through Stu to get on the team. But
so this is an interesting story. Is the job came open right after Coach Beckert left, and Coach Beckert had been kind of mentoring me. And when Coach Beckert was leaving, I was doing a lot more things than I had done previously. I was helping with travel. I was way more involved than I had been. And when Coach Beckert left, the job came open, and I walked into Coach Morrill's office, and I remember being just terrified. And I walked in, and I said, Coach, I'd like to get a shot at that ops job. And he looked at me and said, okay, all right. Well, it ended up he hired somebody else. And then
he left after he went to BYU.
That person only lasted, I'm not going to mention names. No, he's great. The guy, that guy, he's now on staff at BYU, a great friend. But he lasted 9 months, and then the job came open again. And in the beginning, Coach Morrill had asked me, he said, hey, you know, I probably should have hired you the last time. And I didn't, you know, we just had a couple conversations about it, and it came open again, and I was like, I'm done. I'm leaving Logan. I had graduated. I was ready to move. And Coach Morrill basically called me and said, hey, I'm going to hire you, and that's kind of the way it's going to be. And Coach called me, and he said, come see me in my office. And I was like, oh, how's this going to go?
<You know? laughs> Right, yeah.
I hadn't been summoned to the boss's office yet. And so that was kind of my first experience there, and I got in there, and he said, hey, this is your formal interview. I want to hire you. Are you good with it? Do you have any reservations? And I actually said, Coach Guy, I'd like to think about it overnight.
Oh, how did he think about that?
And he was good. He was great. He said,
I know some of the players, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, and for me it was, you know, my mind was made up. I was leaving Logan. I had graduated. I was ready to go. I mean, the truck was literally packed. I was on my way out.
Where were you headed?
No idea. Oh. No idea, but we were leaving. So Coach Morrill took a chance on me. I was 23 years old, and I cannot repay that man enough. I have the utmost respect for him. I still talk to him on a regular basis. Check in. He does text now, which is awesome.
Does he really?
So yeah, if every few weeks I'll get a text from him, or if I hear something going on in the valley that I feel like he would care to know about, I'll shoot him a text. But
that's awesome.
The opportunity he provided me, I couldn't be any more thankful for. It has set me up for, you know, everything thus far. And I really, really appreciate the time I got to spend with Coach before he retired.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you were present through some of his highest career times and probably some of the more low areas of his career.
For sure.
And at the end, like when, you know, it went out. And you've seen not even just his career, some of the highest, like I said, at Utah State basketball and when we dropped off a little bit there.
For sure.
You know, talk to us a little bit about that, the contrast between the two, you know, the two ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah.
Spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, it was – anybody who goes into coaching understands the roller coaster that you sign up for.
Yeah.
And when I got in with Coach Moore, I mean, we were in the midst of winning three in a row, WAC championships. We were going to the NCAA tournament, and you know, things were awesome. And then we made the league jump to the Mountain West, and obviously there's growing pains with that. And actually Utah State itself has started winning games, and especially a league title last year, quicker than anybody else who's made the transition into the league. And, you know, for me it was always about the kids in the school. So the wins and losses, nobody likes to lose. I hate to lose, you know, just like everybody else. But it was always the people I was surrounded with. Coach, the tail end of Coach Morrill's career, we kind of knew it was coming to an end as a staff. And for that last season, it was just hang on to every moment. And all of us felt that way. You know, I can speak for a lot of the members of our staff at the time. We all were just like, man, enjoy this. This is we're working with a legend, and we know he's on his way out. And it was even though we weren't winning as many games as we had hoped to, it was still enjoyable because we knew the opportunity we were given to be working with somebody so instrumental, not only in college basketball, but Logan and just everything he did. And it also his commitment to the university, you know. Multiple times he had an opportunity to leave, and he chose to stay. And it was that experience with Coach Morrill is atop my list of, you know, I was very fortunate and blessed to be able to get a start with him.
Well, so what was that role that he hired you for exactly? Like, what was that contrasting with what you had been doing?
You know, I was hired for as his director of ops, which basically means you handle everything.
Dobo.
Dobo, yep. And that means flights, hotels, buses, help with academics, help with recruiting. Basically, you keep the trains running on time.
Keep Wild Bill from doing something too crazy.
Yes. Yeah, keep Bill in his place. That was on the list a few times. But, it's basically I describe it as a catch-all position because there's no, like, this is what you're responsible for. It's make sure everything's
Coach Smith told us that it was, like, the not fun position. Basically, it's like you think you'd want to do it when you hear the term director of basketball operations, and then you're – in it, and you're realizing you don't get to work with player development very much. It's more of like you said, making sure operations are happening so that teams arrive on time, they have places to stay. Did you enjoy it though? Like, was it awesome, or was it more like I want to do more with the guys?
I enjoyed every minute of it, and I realized very quickly, you know, I went into that role thinking I want to be a coach. Who doesn't want to be a coach? And I realized very quickly that my skill set was much better suited for the administrative route, and I embraced it. That's why I lasted 5 years in that role, 6 years with my stint at Grand Canyon. But a lot of people don't last very long just because it is so much detail work. It is, and it's all the time. It's never turns off. It's late at night. It's early in the morning. It's, you know, and I loved it. I love it still. I mean, I'm in a similar role now with what I'm doing, and I enjoy it still.
That's awesome.
Speaking of what you're doing now, where are you now?
Currently, I am the athletic director at Logan High School. Again, an opportunity that came up through my coaching network, people I knew from town. I'm absolutely enjoying it. I really enjoy the kids. I have a great time. I've put you know, to get kids in the office, they're scared of adults, I've decided. High schoolers are a little bit intimidated by adults, so...
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I'm smart enough to figure this out. I've put a fridge full of Gosner milk just because that's what I was trying to do at the university. Yep. We have about 15 candy jars that are chuck full all the time. And, I get kids in there, and we talk and get to know them, and I'm
having the best time. You also drive a windowless van and it says ice cream free candy?
No, I do not do that.
Oh, because I heard that's a good way of getting kids in there.
Yeah. It's the quickest way to get to know kids is to let them know you care about them, and that's what it is. And those kids, I mean, they're in there every morning waiting for their chocolate milk, and that's awesome. All it is.
That's awesome.
Chocolate milk.
Yeah, that's awesome, though.
It's got to be a little different for you than being at Utah State, though, right?
It is. You know, this has been my first fall without college basketball in 12 seasons. And to say it was easy, I'd be lying to you. There's a lot of things I'm extremely there's a lot of things I miss. I gave up a lifestyle that is move every 2 years, and you know, you're never quite sure where you're going to be or who you're going to be working for. The coaching world, it's a carousel. I mean, it is. It's sometimes you're on, sometimes you're off, and you know, I gave that up and realized once the fall hit that I miss a lot of things about it. College basketball gave me some of the most cherished relationships of my life. Some of the most influential people. Yes, Bill, that includes you. Some of the most influential people. So giving that up and something I worked, you know, I worked really hard to get into it. Not many people would do the stuff I did as far as laundry and packing bags. Yeah. And I, Bill can attest to this. We met at the Spectrum frequently for Airsoft War or two.
Yep.
I lived there. I was there.
If you wanted to hang out with Coach Parker, you had to go to where he was, which was at the Spectrum, which was fine by me because of
that was Bill's
fun.
Home away from home anyway.
Yeah, it was a fun little playground for us for a long time.
Yeah,
but
go play volleyball.
Yeah, for a while I used to think he was only friends with me because I had the keys to the Spectrum. But
that was why.
Well, I don't have those anymore, and he's still here. So
yeah, friendship bloomed from there.
Yeah,
for sure. But yeah, it's college basketball itself was awesome, and this next chapter has been equally as awesome. So I don't really know what the future holds as far as what I'll be doing, but I know I enjoy what I do with young people. So
that's cool, good. Man. So let's talk about some of your favorite moments, because, like I said, you've seen some pretty awesome things in the Spectrum. So I want to know some of your favorite moments in the Spectrum, some of your favorite moments on the road, and just maybe just one of your favorite moments, just being at Utah State.
Oh man, thinking of favorite moments, I get asked that a lot. What's your favorite moment of your experience at Utah State? And I can honestly answer that by saying it wasn't a single moment. It was the people that I got to be with. Our players were always treated me so well, even as a water boy. I never felt like they were, using me or it's the people. And as far as moments in the Spectrum, just any night that place was rocking. Yep. I mean, it's such a unique venue, and I've had the opportunity to go to Gonzaga. I've been to I've been to a million places, the Pit multiple times. I've been to all over on the East Coast. Duke, yeah, we played at Duke. I mean, I've been to a ton of venues, and I'm telling you, I should back up and say, I got myself in trouble last year as I was working at Grand Canyon because that place has this reputation now of being the biggest party in college basketball. And we got to our first game there, and I said, man, this place doesn't hold anything on Utah State when it's right. And they were so offended. So offended. And it's the truth. Utah State is a special place. The Spectrum's a special place.
Well, I know they've done a lot at Grand Canyon to bring and foster that.
Yeah.
In fact, because they played us here a few times, there was some people would come interview me and say, hey, how could we get it to be like that? And I was just like, oh, you guys are really trying to be hard. So when I heard they got to a cool level, I've always wanted to go check it out.
I've been to their campus, but for baseball game.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful campus. It is a beautiful campus. They've put a lot of money into it, a lot of effort. It's really beautiful.
It is. And, it's a great college basketball environment. Do not get me wrong. It is fantastic. But again, when the Spectrum's right and it's rocking, I still haven't been to a place that I would, pick over the Spectrum when it's rolling. So,
well, that's good to know.
For sure.
So I want to know then, if you don't have a specific moment, because I would say that's difficult, because that's like asking a fan. I think it's different when we talk to the players, because their games maybe stand out a little more to them, right? But do you have any favorite Coach Morrill moments? There's got to be some of those.
Anything you dare say on there?
Hey,
he won't listen. We'll just tell him when we interview him.
I'm sure he would find it if it were out there. But no, Coach Morrill, my favorite Coach Morrill moment was the first time I got to see the sweep dance.
Yes.
And the reason being is
I never did get to see it in person.
The reason being, I had heard about it for so long.
Tell us what it is first.
So Coach Morrill's sweep dance is, if you have a two-game road series, so you're going to two places on the road, and you win both of them, he does a sweep dance, and it's literally him pushing a broom, and he's, dancing around, and it's just so out of character for him. And the first time I got to see it was actually, we were in the Mountain West, and we'd stayed on the road. We'd went to, I want to say, Colorado State and maybe Air Force. I can't remember who it was. But we'd stayed on the road. We didn't come home in between. So we end up winning both of those games. And I remember as we're walking in to address the team, Coach Felton turns and looks at me, and I look at him, and I was like, and we gave him the sign. We both start So we tell Coach, Coach, you've got to do the sweep dance. And it was Coach Morrill's last sweep dance that he did in his career, which, I don't know, maybe that's just overly sentimental, but it was a cool moment. And I guess I enjoyed it because it was so out of character for Coach. It was one of those things that, you know, we probably weren't going to see again. And it was just a good way to go out for us, you know, with him retiring, and it was fun. That was probably my best Coach Morrill story. Everything else would would include some expletives that we've
talked to plenty of players.
Yeah. So that's probably my best Coach Morrill story that's appropriate for the setting. But the memories I have with Coach are there's a lot.
One of my favorite, we just not too long ago interviewed Preston Medlin, and he talks a story about where he pounds on his chest, and Coach told him if he did that again, he'd rip off his effing arms.
Yeah. I remember the day that happened when Preston did that, and I remember one of my thoughts being, and this Cam Gardner and I sat right behind the bench. He was a manager with me, and the two of us sat there, and Preston got on a roll and did that, and we both looked at each other. I vividly remember this. We were both like, uh-oh. you shouldn't have done that.
You're a freshman,
that,
dude.
Yeah, that was a mistake. You should not have done that. We were right.
One of my favorite Coach Parker moments, I'll tell you this story, is one time I'm sitting in my house doing nothing but minding my own business.
Oh, right.
And then all of a sudden, with Ty Wesley, we're just hanging out all by ourselves.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Preston was there too. We just get bombarded with water balloons.
That it could not be any further from the truth.
Did you shoot water balloons at us?
Maybe one.
No,
not there bombarded.
There was at least maybe 50 one. Million of them.
No. Oh, my gosh. So in retaliation, let me finish the story so we can get this accurate.
He lived across the street from me.
Right across the street. So in retaliation, somebody decides that they're going to flip off our power in our apartment.
Make him come outside.
Oh. To make us come out. Well, the second we crack that door to go outside, zing, Roman candle. Zing, Roman candle in our apartment from across the street.
Dude, that's nothing that, like, we didn't do in my own house.
Well, right. I can't deny that. No, we had some good times. That was definitely one of the best.
Last time you bombarded me with water balloons.
That's true. That is true. I learned my lesson. Yes, I did, for sure.
Yeah, we were quite creative and getting payback, so.
Yeah.
And then some.
Do you ever feel like, sorry, I was just thinking about it when you were talking about Coach Morrill a moment ago, but did you feel like they ever, I guess you probably definitely felt this way because talking to them they did, but like we're trying not to react, like laugh sometimes at Coach Morrill when he would be super upset, but they would be like, oh shoot, like. Like, I know when he tore his pants at one point, it was at New Mexico or something, but, like, these kinds of stories are kind of interesting, and I'd love to get your perspective because, again, you're not somebody that's a disciplinarian to the guys,
for
so
sure.
you're probably locking eyes with them, too, like, oh, my gosh, is this for real? Like, how are we going to not laugh right now? Or,
you know,
like the sweep dance, is everyone cheering at that point when he's doing the sweep dance, or are they all like...
It was one of those things where you're just hoping that nobody, like, takes it too far because you're like, oh, what, you know, Coach, he's letting down his guard a little bit.
Right,
hopefully
right.
Nobody takes it too far. But you spoke about it a little bit. The night Coach ripped his pants at New Mexico State, which is the worst venue to do it. They are
right.
The meanest fans I've been in front of. And I got the opportunity to go back last year as we were in the same league as them again. They're still mean. They're still out of line. They're still, you know, all of those things. And the night Coach ripped his pants, I had totally forgotten about that till you mentioned it. I vividly remember Coach Becker saying, Jesse, come over here. And I was like, what? What's going on? He said, Coach ripped his pants. And I'm like, okay. So I followed Coach Morrill up and down the sideline, standing right behind the bench as he was coaching, just so that those fans couldn't see that his pants had been ripped.
I was literally just
side shuffling. Wow. Up and down, you know, a coach would take three steps to the right, I'd scoot over three steps to the right. Coach would take three steps to the left, I'd scoot three steps to the left. And that was a fun moment, and I remember asking him at halftime, Coach, do you want me to try and fix your pants? And with some expletives, how are you going to fix my pants? And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I did. I have super glue for when shoes fall apart. We could figure out something, but no, that was a fun Coach Morrill moment, for sure.
That's so funny.
changing the stride here to a little more heavy of a time. One of the darkest times in the spectrum was during practice that you were there for, and that was when Danny Berger went down with his heart, whatever it was. It wasn't a heart attack. It was a cardiac arrest, right?
Yes.
Whoops.
And actually, he just got married, and his dad pulled you and Mike Williams up and talked about, you know, thanks to these guys, we're here tonight. But can we talk a little bit about that, how crazy that was?
Yeah, you know.
I mean, before you get going, I mean, you had to have been, I mean, on your game, because you noticed before, you know, practice that the AED was not on the cart.
Yeah, we'll start from the beginning with that. You know, this is, my perspective totally changed that day, and I've never been changed by something like I was witnessing what we all witnessed in the gym. I know it sounds dramatic now because you see him and you're like, oh, he's healthy, but what we saw at the time of the accident was not something you expect to see. So that day, randomly, I don't even know. I mean, obviously, things happen for a reason. I'm a firm believer in that. But I'd walk to Mike Williams' training room like I do every single day, and I was just, you know, hanging out with Mike, and the guys were coming in to get taped, and I looked over, and on his desk, there was the AED, and I said, oh, Mike, what's going on with this? And Mike had mentioned, he said, well, the battery light's blinking. I need to get a new battery ordered. And I was like, oh, okay. Thought nothing of it. End of discussion, end of, you know, thought nothing of it. Well, we went through practice that day, and we were towards the very end, and ironically, we were about to play BYU. Bill and I joke about that. That had something to do with it. But we were walking through their plays at the end, and I remember I was sitting behind the clock and, you know, just keeping score and doing my normal deal. And the look on Danny's face when he was about to go down, he just looked straight up in the air, and I knew at that split second something was wrong. I was out of my seat as quickly as I could, and I have no idea if it was intuition, what it was, but I was sprinting up that tunnel because I knew something was seriously wrong. I really felt like, you know, the AED was going to be a necessary tool for whoever. And I sprinted up that tunnel as fast as I could, and I remember as I grabbed the AED and I was on my way back down, and I was already on the phone calling the paramedics, because I just knew what I saw. It's hard to describe the look on his face and you know, his movement and his mannerisms, but what I saw told me that this was not okay. It was not good. So I sprinted up. I grabbed the AED, which, if anybody's been to the Spectrum, knows that the tunnel that goes up the where the visitors enter and exit, it's a ways. I mean, it's a long ways. And I sprinted up there and got it, and on my way down, I was already on the phone with the paramedics, and we hold one of the quickest response times.
Yep.
And that's what's cool about the whole deal, is that it worked out.
Yep.
You know, the paramedics showed up within 3 minutes. The Mike was able to get the AED on, and he was already through a cycle of CPR. Coach Felton, I vividly remember him asking, let me know when you need a spell, Mike. I'm right behind you. You know, we just had a lot of people in the right place doing the right things. And that's a testament to the kind of people who worked at Utah State. Not myself, but Mike. Mike was a rock star during that whole thing, and he knew just what to do. And I, you know, it was crazy. Danny was shocked twice by the AED, which is, I mean, most people do not survive that. You know, if it's shocking you twice in the amount of time that it was him, from what I understand, I'm not an expert, but, you know, usually the outcome is not a positive one. But for everything to happen the way it did, me to question Mike, why is the AED not here, for, you know, to have the intuition to run up there and grab it, which was a ways away, and get it on him, and it shocked almost immediately, saying that, you know, it was really necessary. And it was a perfect storm, if you will.
Yeah.
And we can joke about it now. I mean, Danny and I talk about it every December 4th.
It's Phoenix Day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. December 4th, that's one of the first text messages I usually wake up to, is a message from him just being appreciative of, you know, how it turned out. We were actually roommates at the time, and you know, that was a traumatic experience for all of us, but in the end it brought us so much closer. I feel like we all share a bond that, you know, is pretty unique with how that turned out. So
something that I've noticed in the time that I've gotten to know Danny more and you know, doing this podcast, we've talked to Mike a few times and we keep telling him we want to get him on. And it's funny to me to talk to you about it versus Mike, because Mike is like literally is almost over talking about it. Like he's like, I don't want to, like he doesn't want to take any of the credit for it. And in fact, he gives you like credit. It's like, well, he went and, you know, he did this. And
that's Mike, for sure.
It is. And I think that's like you said, that's the type of people that have been, you know, hired into that situation. They were prepared. You knew what to do. You know, and I think it's the whole story. And I know as Aggie fans, we hear it a lot, especially as we talk about it on this podcast, because we've talked to so many people that were close to the situation. But it's just, man, it's humbling to sit here and listen to you talk about it. And even though you say you can joke about it now, it's no joking matter when you're doing it and absolutely dealing with it, and you're close with that person and you see them go down like that, you don't know how you're going to react. You for really sure don't. It's, and you could have reacted poorly in the sense of like you're close with that person, yeah, but you also knew.
Well, and you know, for some of us, it was watching our roommate, our brother, mm-hmm, somebody we spent a ton of time. So what I remember when it happened after we got the AED and Mike was doing his deal and the ambulance had just pulled down onto the court, the team had taken off like a gunshot. I mean, everybody just dispersed to all different corners of the gym. And I remember Coach Morrill just being like, where are our guys? You know, he was so concerned. Everybody was so concerned about how our guys were interpreting all this. Because after all, I mean, I was young, and the guys we had on the team were younger than me. You know, we're talking 18, 19, 20 years old. To see what they saw, and then it just, I mean, it was one of their brothers, and they took off. They didn't know how to wrap their heads around what they were seeing. And that was one of the moments that I was like, wow, this is, you know, this is way more serious than you think when you see how their teammates were reacting to it and the effect it had on them.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, and anytime you talk to Danny's dad, he brings you guys up. And obviously at Danny's wedding, he thanked you guys. And I just think that's special, even if Mike and you don't want to, you know, receive credit for it. I think it's super important that people realize like those are real life heroes that live amongst us and like have taken care and saved a life, and not just one, but, you know, multiple lives.
Well, Mike will say, oh, I was just doing my job.
Yeah.
And that's what a hero is. This guy that just does his job.
Yep.
You know, because Mike, you could have not been doing your job. You could have not noticed that it was, you know, low on battery.
Well, it's exactly what Danny's dad said when we had him on, was that the paramedics, the people driving, every person did their job, and it worked.
Perfectly.
Yep.
And it worked.
We were very fortunate, and I couldn't be happier about that. That was
absolutely
for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was a crazy time. Switching gears, let's go to a time that another kind of a depressing. I remember you were depressed there for a little bit. Pretty scary time at first, but to be honest, don't know how to segue how to transition this. So I'm just
like a Band-Aid. Get it over with.
Bluntly say it. You're gay.
I am.
And at the time, for a long time, you weren't out. You probably didn't realize it yourself. However that was going on. But I remember it was a pretty rough time for you at first because, you know, we friends were concerned for a while because you were the skinniest I've ever seen you in your freaking life. and, you know, you were working out a lot, but, you know, there was just something there. And I remember after you came out, you know, you were much happier. Somebody did a story on it, like the nationwide thing. You went to the Final Four. Talk to me about being in a profession that's not heavily, you know, you don't think of gay people when you think of, you know, or collegiate sports, right?
No, absolutely. You know, I can tell anybody and look them in the eyes and let them know that this was not a choice for me. Especially considering my background, how I grew up, the son of a coach in a small town, involved with a Division I basketball team.
Yeah,
right. You know, if
it's not like you were in the theater and where it's more acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and so for me it was coming to terms and a realization about that. So let me back up just a little bit, and one of the reasons I told Coach Morrill that I needed one day to think about taking the job with the team was this, that, being gay. The fact that I was starting to figure that out and I didn't want, I was so concerned that my, me being on his staff would affect the team, would affect recruiting, would affect the guys, would affect, you know, just this long list of things. And I can tell you that I took one whole day just nervous about how this is going to look. Am I going to be a headline? I did not want to be a headline. I didn't want to, you know, put the team in jeopardy in any way. I didn't want any of the players to be uncomfortable with me being around. And it stressed me out to I mean, it was bad. You know, you touched on it. It was bad.
How was the reception from players and coaches?
Well,
when you finally did come out,
you know, it took about a year after I took the job, and things had gotten so low for me. You know, on the outside, it appeared that I had everything I wanted. I was 24 years old. I was making a decent income. I was working with a college basketball team. I was traveling around the country. I was, you know, to an outsider, it was hey, things couldn't be better for somebody. And on the inside, it was polar opposite. I was working out 3 times a day. I weighed 125 pounds.
Are you serious?
Wow. It got scary. It got to a point where I didn't think I was going to physically be able to keep up with what I was doing. And you know, it all came to a head when Coach Felton, he was here for a long time with me, when he pulled me aside on a road trip and he said, "Hey, I'm really concerned about you. What's going on?" And I said, "Nothing. I'm good. You know, don't worry about it." And it was at that moment when I was like, "Wow, if somebody I'm working with is noticing," I said, "we've got an issue." And Coach Felton, again, that night, I remember he checked up on me again and just said, "Hey, man, I don't know what's going on with you, but I'm concerned. What, you know, you make sure you let me know if you need anything." And it was just that feeling of support from him that allowed me to get through that.
Now, had you talked to anyone else outside of the team about this, or was this like actually
this was
a whole life thing, not just your career?
Yeah, this was a whole life thing. Okay. I was dealing with it all.
I just think that's important to know. Yeah. That for it's sure. not just about the perception from the team, but you're dealing with it internally
for sure.
Well, right.
Well, and like even me, like I would say I was one of your closer buddies at the time, and still I consider you a very close friend. But I had no idea. But I also have the worst gaydar in the world. I lived with a gay guy, and he told me one day, "I said, wait, you're gay?" He's like, "Dude, I've been out for like 2 years." He's like, "Oh, okay,
cool." So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, your gaydar is not your strongest suit, that's for sure.
No, it's not. But, like, but we know when I found out, it was just like, well, finally, like, I hope Jesse can now be happy.
Yeah,
you know? And it was a really scary time.
It was. And, you know, I had one of my best friends, she pushed me to finally come out. She put a lot of, not pressure, it was all out of love because she was so concerned.
But you hadn't even told her.
No, I hadn't. I hadn't told anybody. It was this deep, dark secret. She just knew. Yeah, and if you have a girl best friend, they usually just know. So, <that's>, but yeah, she just knew, and you know, she put some pressure on me to do it, and I'm so happy she did. Now looking back, throughout that week, I told my family and I told all my extended family, and then the next week, we got up. I came back to work, and I remember. It was in the summer, and so all the coaches were recruiting but me and Coach Morrill, and we were the only ones in the office. And Coach Morrill poked his head in, and it was a Friday, and he said, "Hey, why don't you get out of here a little early today?" He said, "There's nothing going on." He said, "I'm going to take off after I wrap this up, so why don't you finish up and take off for the weekend?" And I said, "Okay, Coach," and I don't know what got into me. I have no idea why. I stood up and followed him into his office.
Oh, wow.
And I got there, and I was like, "What are you doing? Why? What are you doing?" And I shut the door behind us, and I said, "Coach, I need to talk to you." And Coach is going, "Oh man, what could this be about?" I mean, I think he thinks I'm resigning, or you know, I'm whatever. And I had a good conversation with Coach Morrill, and it was the first time. He was one of the first people who ever showed me compassion for this. And he did. He was so compassionate and so loving and just so kind with. You know, I told him, I said, "Coach, you know, I'm gay. I've known for a long time. I'm concerned about it. I don't want it to affect your program." I told him, I remember saying, I remember saying, if you think it's going to be a problem, I'll resign today. We'll, you know, we'll handle it with the media. We'll just tell them that I went to pursue a master's degree in New Guinea, wherever, I don't know where. and we'll proceed that way. And Coach mm-hmm. Morrill looked at me with tears in his eyes and he said, nope. He said, if anybody asks me, I'm going to tell them I didn't hire you because of that. I don't employ you because of that. And I don't care. And I remember I was so taken back by Coach Morrill's response that, I mean, Coach Morrill had my back. It was like, yeah. you know, he was in my corner. And that was one of the, I mean, that was a great moment with Coach. And I got up to leave his office and he wrapped me in a hug and he said, I'm proud of you. And that was it. You know, we never talked about it again with Coach Morrill. I never once came up. Things
just
were
back
good.
To business as usual.
It was back to business. And that was, once I had my family's approval, once I had somebody that I looked up to and admired so much as Coach Morrill, I was good. I didn't care. And then, you know, throughout that next week, Coach Morrill said, well, you probably need to tell the staff. And I was like, well, yeah, I do need to, just because I think Coach Morrill might have been concerned he would slip up and tell him or whatever.
Exactly right.
So throughout the next few days, I told all the staff, and I just had nothing but a positive response.
Yeah.
You know, Coach Felton was phenomenal, just rock solid. Coach Duryea.
He obviously knew something was up. So,
yeah.
So he probably was a breath of relief that, this is hopefully what the problem was.
For
he
sure.
Just, he was had the secret.
Yep.
He can
for
now
sure.
live his life.
Yeah, and Coach Duryea was so good to me, and his family was so good to me through all of that. And Coach Jones was on staff at the time, now at Utah, and he was so good to me. And I told them, and I was kind of expecting like this like response that I didn't get. I was a little bit disappointed. I'm like, I've been bottling this up, and you guys really just don't care. but in the big scheme of things, you know, you're so worried about it. Recruiting is so competitive now, and you know, how that's going to affect the team. And my biggest fear was that we'd lose a kid because of that, or, you know, it'd be breaking news. And I don't know. I thought the worst.
How did friends and the team react?
I could not have been any more disappointed with my friends' reactions, to be honest with you.
Really?
And I say that because I had built this up to be like these biggest news, and all of them were, oh, cool. Cool. Don't care. Like, I mean, you and I's first encounter with it. I mean, slightly inappropriate on your part.
That's how I am.
Yes, it was. But even that, you know, I was just like, I kind of expected somebody to care. And when they didn't, I didn't know how to wrap my head around it. I'm like, oh, okay. Things are good.
We cared to the point of, obviously, about you. But, I mean, you could love a duck and I wouldn't really care.
Right. Well, and I think that's an important distinction to make, too, is it's not that nobody cared. It was just that it did not affect how they felt about you as a person.
Absolutely.
Regardless. And I think that's awesome because you, I guess, in a sense, like, got lucky with who you were surrounded by, because very well could have gone a different direction with any one of those names mentioned, right?
I don't think it's luck. I think that's just –
Well, no, I don't know how else to put it.
I think it's – you're a good person. You surround yourself with good people. I've been very fortunate that you stooped to my level and let me come hang out. But, like, you've just surrounded yourself around good people that, you know, it's been like that. And unfortunately, it's not like that for everybody.
That's what I mean,
And to your point, it's not like that for everybody. You know, I had so many friends at the time I was navigating all this and trying to figure out my life and how I was going to live.
Yeah.
I had so many friends who had a reverse experience. Their parents had cut them off, or, you know, they had friends who wouldn't associate with them anymore. And I can honestly say I have not had any of that.
You've done some outreach, right? You've helped people through.
I have. You know, when when I first came out, and you place yourself in front of 10,000 people on a nightly basis in a basketball arena, people start to, I guess, see you as a quote-unquote, a figure. Not that I see myself that way, but a few, you know, younger guys mostly that were going to school at Utah State had reached out to me. And they, you know, it was just as a resource, just as a support system. And that's one of my most rewarding times with all of this, you know, in the last however long it's been, 6-7 years.
Gosh, has it been that long?
Yeah. It's
wow.
been a minute. it has been the mentorship I've been able to provide to some of these kids who just didn't have the have the perfect setting that I had, you know, and a couple of them actually ended up hanging out with my friends afterwards. And it was a, you know, being able to be around people and be yourself, you know, people don't understand what it's like when you're hiding this big secret. No. You know, it was like running a marathon every time I told somebody. Literally, I would get out of breath. I would be so exhausted.
Yeah.
And so to be that support for somebody was good. It was definitely positive.
I have no idea how that would be to have to, like, feel like you couldn't be yourself. I've been myself around everybody my entire life. And for good or bad, but it weeds out the people that, you know, care and don't care.
Yep.
And so, dude, I couldn't imagine that struggle.
It's real. And so, you know, now that I work back in high school, I think that's something I try to remember every day is you really don't know what kids are going through, what people are going through. The surface can look so different. I mean, for me, you look at my situation. Again, I was 23, 24 years old. Had a great career. I was working college basketball team.
You were hanging out with some hot chicks, too. I was like, why isn't Jesse hitting that?
Yeah, that question got me a lot. Is why are all your best friends girls? And why are they so cute? And why are they so nice?
I was just like, Coach, why are you not just smashing?
Well, surprise.
Yeah, but turns out I'm not Jesse's type.
We talked about that before.
Yeah, I was a little offended.
Somebody is a little bitter.
We were at Crystal Hot Springs.
Awesome place, by the way.
Crystal or lava?
Crystal. It was Crystal.
Sorry. It was Crystal.
I just want to get the story straight.
I love Crystal. Seriously. Yeah, and they've renovated. It's an awesome place.
Yeah.
We were at Crystal, and there was just, like I said, I don't know if it was like a certain night or just like these guys at all, but there was a bunch of gay guys there. And I'm like, Coach, let's go talk to them. I'll go up there and talk to them with you.
Wanted to wingman you.
Yeah, man. I'm all about wingmaning. Yeah, I'll wingman my dude for another dude. That's fine. And he's like, dude, they're big and bearded. And I looked at him. I said, yeah. And I was just like, you don't think I'm attractive? He's like, well, you're not gay. I'm like, well, yeah, but I'd like to know that I'm desirable still. I'd like to know that I'm still attracted to people.
I crushed your dreams that night.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Golly, this guy.
Oh, man. So you mentioned before that you got some kind of national attention.
Oh, yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
So I attended shortly after I came out. I got invited to a Nike. It was called the Be True Summit. It was in Portland, Oregon. And I got invited to that shortly after I'd come out. I'd met a couple people. There was a publishing. It's called Outsports. It's still going on. And they write just these stories about, you know, people coming out in the sports space. And that's, you know, just kind of to promote.
Well, and wasn't your name changed?
It was. So at the time, I went to the summit and, I was terrified to go. I went by myself. But I felt like I needed to have a group. I needed to fit in somewhere. And so I went and proved to be a great decision. I networked with all these people and still communicate with them, on a regular basis. But we left the summit and I got home and I got a phone call from the guy who organized it. And he said, hey, I'm about to write this piece. Would you contribute? And I remember saying, no, I'm not in a position to do that. I said, I'm just figuring all of this out. I'm not in a position that I want to do that. And he said, well, would you do it if I don't mention your name? And, I agreed to that. And it was a great piece that brought awareness to, you know, again, just you don't know what people are going through. On the outside, they appear to have all their ducks in a row. And on the inside, that's not always the case.
Yep.
And so, it was an Outsports article written by Sid Ziegler. And he just covers, you know, there were four of us named in it that were all fake names.
Is he gay? The people that do these articles, are they also?
Yeah, and so he...
And is he in the sporting writing world? Or?
He is a sports writer, and he also he officiates high school football in California.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so basically he's trying to promote, you know, gay culture in the sports world and why so many... We have so many closeted athletes who are scared to come out.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what he writes on. He's been a great... influential person in my story, not for his writing, but just in being a resource for me, being a connection. He connected me with hundreds of people that I still, to this day, am in touch with and reach out to. You know, it was a great, great move for me to go to that. And I was terrified, I'm telling you. It was.
I think you're a very good role model, because, like, to me, you're kind of non-typical. You have, like, you don't really fit the stereotype. And so for other kids that don't fit the stereotype, you don't have the gay accent, you don't, you know, do the, you know, the more feminine activities.
Over the top,
like in the 90s, sure. That's what we thought, you know, a gay person was, right?
For sure.
We've come a long way since then. But you are, you know, looking at you, talking to you, you're not going to know, you know. And so I think that that's a good thing for kids to realize, that it's just like, oh, this, he's completely normal. I'm completely normal.
Yep.
I can be who I am. And yep. that's with anything. I'm not even just talking as, you know, as a gay kid. Like, they could be any kid. Be like, oh, you know, I can be myself in whatever I'm doing.
For right. sure. And that's what I, you know, now with my role is I try and teach those kids to embrace who you are. It's awesome that everybody's different. Nobody wants us all to be the same. I mean, what fun is that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely.
Coach, thank you so much. Do you have anything else?
No, yeah. That was awesome.
Thank you so much for
thank
taking
you for having
your time
me.
To...
Of course, I appreciate
been
you guys.
Trying to get you on for a while.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, I was a little apprehensive at first, but...
Yeah. Well, do you mind leaving us with our tagline there?
Absolutely. Every Aggie is a legend. What's your story?
Perfect.
Thanks, buddy. Coach. Appreciate it.
We'll see you.